गौरचंद्राय राधिकाय प्रणाले कृष्णाय कृष्णभक्ताय तद्भक्ताय नमो नमः। गुड मॉर्निंग, प्रणाम, वेलकम, थैंक्स फॉर कमिंग अगेन। एंड टुडे In the morning, we are doing what sometimes call isagosti, or I like to call Q&E, quest and exploration. We will spend the last two meetings after this one exploring the reminder of the third person of Shikshastakam today in the evening and tomorrow evening, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't need to do an extra introduction about the glories of making questions. I tried to make that clear the other day, so nobody is shy about having inquiries. On the contrary, there is a big glory about, how to say, curiosity. Yesterday, I was having a conversation that eventually will be a podcast with this devotee that was telling you, Sukha Bahadasi, Prabhupada disciple, very interesting personality. And at one point she mentioned this idea that was like one of the aha moments of the conversation, was like, curiosity is the cure for judgmentalism. Right, we were talking about questions and having questions and the importance of how asking good questions open new realities, and that's tied to being curious, remaining curious, remaining open. And judgmentalism is the opposite, being conclusive, being too certain about people, about everything, putting everything. Our mind is like a labeling machine. You have that in the supermarket that puts the labels on everything. Mm-hmm. That's the mind, labeling people, everyone. Box number one, you belong to category number 3, 4, over. Case closed, next one. Curiosity is the opposite. It's a constant openness to explore, and also to is very tied to what we are talking these days, because we are talking about the third verse of Shikshastakam, which starts speaking about humility. For me, humility is also like having the humility of not taking things for granted, of not being too certain about how I see things, how I think about things, and always remaining open about everything. I may have heard about Krishna for the last 25 years, but I should be humble enough not to conclude I know everything about Krishna. I have to remain open, curious about who is Krishna today. We were talking with her yesterday about how Krishna is constantly evolving and expanding his love. So Krishna is always becoming more Krishna. So every day I have the same question: who is Krishna today? What's all that Krishna wants to be for me in my life today? It's not the same as yesterday. That what keeps Krishna consciousness updated. So that all this is connected to being curious, right? To remaining in an explorative mood, and that is the cure for judgmentalism, from boxing reality, which will be like boxing someone. It's as violent as boxing someone. If you are boxing someone and putting someone in a box, Krishna in a box, ourselves in a box, it makes everything no longer dynamic. Everything suddenly becomes frozen in our box of judgmentalism. No, I'm this, you are that, Krishna is this, I have all the finished formulas. And then what's the result of that? Stagnation, boredom, lack of purpose and meaning. And at one point, it makes no sense to continue living your life like that or doing those things. So sadhana practice in bhakti implies keeping our curiosity in place, every single day, remaining like a child. Remaining, Jesus will say, unless you become like a child, you can't enter into the kingdom of heaven. In Rig Veda, there is one line that says exactly the same thing. So we are called to remain children forever, students forever in Silasiddha Maharaj's words. No? Always open, always curious, always exploration, always wonder, always astonishment. That would keep the whole thing alive. So all this to say, it's okay to have questions. And your questions are welcome. Our questions protect us from judgmentalism. Genuine curiosity keeps us open. So I hope after all that you have one question.
As I said, I've got a million. I already answered what last one. So 900.
Yeah, we still have a few in the list. No problem. It'll take us a few lifetimes, but no problem. It's a joy to.
This is quite a big one, and it's interesting because you're sort of saying putting people in boxes. And this question might come across as putting people in boxes. I'm not sure.
Let's see.
I'm just wondering how we recognize somebody who's on the Majjhim platform. Because in the history of ISKCON, we had sort of like the original 11 who were considered to be Mahabhagavat, and then we realized, well, maybe they're not Mahabhagavat. And then the sort of level of guruship was demoted to, okay, it's okay if you're just Majjhim. So they're all Majjhims now. That's the assumption. And I just wonder, because it seems that, you know, as a Kanishtha, or probably less myself, Kanishtha can't recognize the Majjhim can recognize the different levels, right? But a Kanishtha or less can't. So, but at the same time, we sort of need to recognize that because we want to take shelter of and guidance from and hear from someone who's at a more advanced level. So I wondered if you could say something about that.
Okay. There are a few questions inside the question, so that's it. Hopefully we can honor that with some comprehensive treatment of the topic. So you started asking how to recognize Madhyam Bhakta, which means an intermediate devotee. Of course, first thing that comes to mind is first, there's not only one type of Madhyam. There's not just one level. No, it's not like Kanishtha, Madhyam, Uttam. There are three types of devotees. That's just like a way of speaking, but there are endless stages in between. Right? Even sometimes some devotees have used the expression, you can be a Kanishtha, Kanishtha, or a Kanishtha, Madhyam, or a Kanishtha, Uttam. Then you are a Kanishtha, Madhyam, a Madhyam, Madhyam, a Madhyam, Uttam. Sorry, Madhyam Kanishtha, Madhyam, 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 Uttam. Then you are an Uttam Kanishtha, Uttam Madhyam, Uttam, Uttam. And again, in between those, it's like a way of saying you progress. It's not like, okay, I've been a Kanishtha for the last 20 years, and tomorrow I'm a Madhyam. And then three more lifetimes, I'm a Uttam now. It's, everything is like... So that said, Madhyam, there are different things that scriptures say about it. And again, one of the symptoms of the Madhyam is that he or she is familiar with scripture. Rupa Goswami will make the point that the Madhyam is, his faith is Shastriya Shraddha, which means scriptural faith, while the faith of the Kanishtha is Laukiki Shraddha, which means like, if you want to call mundane faith or sentimental faith, not based on revelation, not based on revealed knowledge, but mostly like whatever I feel or perceive divorced from what scripture is telling about it. No? So as we were talking yesterday, I mean, we are not here against what you feel, what anyone's feel, but also that should be somehow tempered with revelation, no? With some knowledge that helps to understand what we're feeling. And sometimes what we are feeling needs to be purified or refined. It's not that whatever I feel is divine revelation, right? Sometimes we need to go to divine revelation to realize that. at the end of the day, that said, many things are coming. A madhyam, it's someone who, another way, there are so many ways we can talk about these things. It's not just one way of defining. I will define a madhyam as someone who is very, and again, I'm talking in madhyam in general. There are levels of being a madhyam, but generally, a madhyam bhakta is someone who is comfortable with gray instead of black and white thinking. No? Kanishta is more black and white. No. This is bona fide, this is not bona fide. This is the highest, this is the lowest. This is good, this is bad. No, material, spiritual. Still, there are some like dualities or dichotomies. And again, we are not condemning the Kanishta when I'm saying this. When we are speaking about symptoms of a neophyte, everyone needs to be a neophyte at some point of the journey. So it's not bad. It's glorious in its own way. Because you are being a neophyte in bhakti. Like I said the other day, you are having these unstable symptoms in bhakti that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, but he's saying, but all that is happening in the context of bhakti. So that's just glorious in its own way. It's embarrassing in one sense. It's glorious in its own way. So being a Kanishta is glorious in its own way. It's not the ultimate goal, but it's not something that we should like criticize or despise, because it's that proves that you are in the bhakti journey. Follow my point? Because sometimes we may end like, oh, Kanishta, and that's offensive. And that's not compassionate, because it's like, yeah, okay, Kanishta, like being a baby or being like a toddler in bhakti. But you need to be a baby and a toddler in order to become an adult. No? If you are 2 year old and I demand that you behave as a wise elder, you will never be a wise elder. You will be a dysfunctional person for your whole life. So one way to warranty that the Kanishta becomes a Madhyam and an Uttam is to allow the Kanishta to be a Kanishta, as long as that's necessary, healthy, right? So that's important. So yeah, Kanishta is more black and white thinking, still dualistic, still not fully able to navigate paradox, for example. No? Paradoxical thinking is a little bit difficult for a Kanishta. A Madhyam is more able to accommodate things, to live with uncertainty. No? While a Kanishta needs like all the answers, all the replies, official formulas, and a sense of certainty. Okay, I'm doing the right thing. I'm saved. I'm already here. And whoever is not doing that is bad. Again, I'm kind of dramatizing that a little bit, not necessarily like that, but something along those lines. And many times, again, a Kanishta will be more drawn not so much by realization or by deep scriptural knowledge, but probably more like public opinion, what everyone else does, what everyone else says. For example, in connection to what you mentioned about the 11 gurus that were there when Prabhupada passed, and that maybe the public opinion was, okay, they are Mahabhagavatas. And in time, you realize that that was not the case, at least. Yeah, I'm not here to judge where everyone is. But due to some things that happen, you may realize, okay, this is not a symptom of being a Mahabhagavata. Doesn't mean you condemn the person. It's just, but now the question is, okay, why, how you reach that conclusion that they were Mahabhagavata? Probably because that was officially said, and you just went along with that. And I'm not criticizing that. Again, that's part of, in some level, we go along with that. Sometimes devotees come to me and say, okay, such and such devotee is a Nitya Siddha. No? Nitya Siddha is a little bit even above Mahabhagavata, above in one sense, in the sense of he's an eternally liberated soul that is coming from Goloka Vrindavan. And of course, I never challenged that premise, but inside me, I think, how do you know someone is a Nitya Siddha? There's no way to know that. There's nowhere in Shastra says a Nitya Siddha is known by these symptoms. But sometimes we kind of, he's Nitya Siddha. So if I were to ask you, how do you know? Probably you will tell me, because everyone else is saying that. But that's not the method to ascertain nityasiddhaness. Again, that's public opinion. I'm not saying that person is not a nityasiddha, but the point is, we don't know how to establish that. And on top of that, why you need that to be the case? Like, I just bring the topic, not to, again, challenge anyone's faith. Someone say, okay, Srila Prabhupada is a nityasiddha. And some may think, how do you know? Again, maybe he's not a nityasiddha, but he's in Mahabhagavat. So my question is, and I'm not saying here it's this or is that, I'm just, my question is, why you feel the need, if you feel the need, to make him a nityasiddha? Follow my point?
Yeah.
Because in our own faith, if he's a nityasiddha, he's better than if he's not a nityasiddha. And that's not the case. Once actually someone asked Srila Prabhupada, who is more advanced? A nityasiddha, eternally liberated soul, or a sadhanasiddha? Someone who becomes liberated through practice. And he replied in a genius-like way. He said, the important word there is siddha. I don't care about the rest. Implying that, no? Like, see them is perfected. Eternally perfect, became perfect. What's the difference? He's Siddha. Right? Like, trying to put the attention in the right direction, right? So, so of course, as you were mentioning, Bhakti Marga, each one of us need to, or want, should try to ascertain as much as we can. Okay, where is that person advanced? I want to take guidance. And to be honest, in the beginning, we may not be that well equipped to, I mean, again, we may come with a Kanishta perspective on things. Because to be honest, sometimes they would say, okay, the Uttam Bhagavat, the Mahabhagavat, the highest type of devotee, which is the main symptom, it's said in Bhagavatam, that person is seeing Krishna in everything and seeing everything in Krishna. So in one sense, that's pretty abstract. I mean, not abstract for them, but for us to perceive that in others. How do I know if you are seeing Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna? I'm not inside you. So I may try my best to ascertain that, but it's a little bit, if I'm not there myself, I may not be still well equipped to ascertain that. So at that point, I will say my sincerity in my journey is the most important thing. I may try to discern with the tools I have, say Kanishta. Still, the tools are not the greatest toolbox on earth. But at least I will be very sincere, and I choose to emphasize sincerity because probably not all of us, but most of us may have gone through some guru situations in the past with certain personalities which somehow or other, whatever, proved not to be in the stage we thought they were, or this or that. And I wouldn't personally, consider my own journey, I wouldn't look back and say you were wrong about choosing that person. Or probably, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, but if you were sincere at that time, trying to give yourself to Krishna with the toolbox you had, you try to discern as much as you could, and you made certain particular choice, which in time maybe proved not to be the most blissful one. Still doesn't mean that you were not sincere. Still doesn't mean that you didn't learn or receive anything. Still doesn't mean that Krishna didn't come through you through that person. But at some point, maybe means that, okay, I need to move forward and adjust and change the chapter. But it doesn't mean that all that was in vain. Oh, I didn't choose the topmost Mahabhagavat on earth, so that means I'm in zero. And because I've seen the devotees like going, thinking again in that way, which for me is a Kanista way of thinking, a black and white way of thinking. Oh, this happened with your guru, so now you have no guru. That doesn't work like that. What's guru to begin with? Again, if you feel that guru is just limited to one particular person, and if that person had a problem or whatever, then you are unplugged from the current of mercy and you are devoid of shelter in a limbo forever, that's not the case. If you are honest and sincere, Krishna is the original guru. He's a Chaitya guru in your heart. He will compliment for the loss, compensate, provide shelter, inspiration, guidance in so many ways. Guru is wider than what we can think, as we were saying yesterday. For Mahaprabhu, grass is guru. Tree is guru. I mean, in principle, guru is everywhere. Krishna is the original guru, as we said the other day. In our parampara, first guru, Krishna. Krishna is omnipresent. Krishna is omnipresent, Krishna is guru. Make the rest of the math. If Krishna is guru and Krishna is omnipresent, guru is omnipresent. In principle. In practice, we don't have that vision, but in principle, that's the case. So at least in principle, we shouldn't feel like I'm absolutely devoid of guru. As I was talking with a friend of mine recently when I was in Radhakunda, we were talking about even if our connection with certain guru figures became like discontinued, it's not that we have no relationship with guru. Our relationship with guru started from the very moment that we open our hearts to guru, to the reality of Krishna. And that moment, our relationship with guru started. The vessels may have changed in time, but the relationship continues beyond the vessel. So that's a more substantial way of understanding guru, right? So I'm saying all this again to say, even if we, our choices in the past have not been that well informed or whatever that happened, each case is different. It doesn't mean that nothing happened, everything was in vain or anything, but it means that, okay, I have to continue educating myself and learning and trusting that even if I take, because I know that it can be, this is a delicate topic. I have personal experience in this department, as you may know. And we don't want to become cynical also, no, in the point, okay, I have experience with certain guru in the past. It didn't work. It's over now. No, talk to me about Krishna, but don't mention the word guru, please. No. I mean, I can understand that some people need that if they have gone through a very recent guru trauma, PTSD or whatever. So they are recovering. They're very triggered yet, and they cannot hear even the word about that. I can understand that. But also we cannot cancel the whole thing. No? So we need to how to remain open, hopeful, not naive, but not cynical. No, many times when we were extremely naive, sometimes we then jump to the other side of the coin, extreme cynicism. Mm. No? And again, it's a natural moving of the pendulum. No? But eventually, we need to find some middle point, right? With openness, with discernment, with hope. So, we can make more and more. That's how I think it about it. We can make more and more informed decisions. And we, of course, we take responsibility for our choices in the past. And we build up on that. No? Okay, next time I will try to make a more informed decision. It was not in vain what happened so far. And I will try to take the next step in a more informed way, trying to pray sincerely and trusting that whatever I need to receive in this chapter of my life in connection to guru is whatever I need. So also we should think that way. Okay, have this past experience with whomever guru. If I pray sincerely, that was also part of Krishna's arrangement for me in my life at that. Even though it didn't end up as I expected, it doesn't mean that it was not what should have happened. You follow my point? Because sometimes we enter this whole project with a very like over romanticized, idealized notion. Okay, my guru has to be this, and this has to happen in this way, and then you realize, like when you get married with someone or enter into a relationship, it's like okay, and then no, it didn't happen. But that doesn't mean that you have to think I lost my time, and that person didn't contribute in any way to my life. or it was all my fault. Now we can go to so many places. It was all my fault, or you play extremely the victim and not take any responsibility. So again, being a Madhyam, going back to Madhyam means Madhyam, intermediate, no? Threading the middle path. Don't go into one extreme or to the other. Taking responsibility for what happened and learning the lessons we need to learn. Many of them are extremely painful. And again, that's a big conversation we have had a little bit the other day. The role of pain, the role of suffering in teaching us, schooling us, opening our hearts. So we needed those lessons. And whomever was instrumental in delivering those lessons in our life, as painful as they were, okay, we are grateful for that also. Those were teachers. Especially, generally, the most painful moments in our life are our greatest teachers. It's not that I'm promoting masochism here, right? Yeah. It's just that it happens to be that way. It happens that there's place for pain in our love project. Actually, yesterday we were talking with Sukha Baha, and I don't want to digress so much from the topic, but you cannot have love without pain, and you can have pain without love. Real pain, I mean, we can have pain without love, but that's not real pain. That's a misreading of pain. And if you think that love is without pain, that's a misreading of love, right? See the gopis in Vrindavan. Don't you think they suffer? In their own way, they suffer in love. It's not the same suffering without love. So real love includes suffering. Real suffering includes opens the heart, so includes love also. But many times we have a wrong idea about both love and pain. No, I think love should be just everything is nice and everything are like butterflies and ting, 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 having joy all day. But pain is also there. Again, a certain type of pain, a sweet pain in its own way. And sometimes we think suffering is something bad, that is not teaching us anything, that has no purpose, that should be avoided as much as possible. And that's not pain. You follow my point? So all these situations with gurus and so on have to do with that as well. And again, in order to, if someone is in a situation, okay, I don't want to close myself to the possibility of connecting with some sadhu in my life that may guide me, whatever form that takes, whether it's initiating guru, siksha guru, I mean, someone who is like a reference, and we come wounded by some previous chapters, so we are also naturally not like opening immediately. It's okay. In fact, Srila Sanatan Goswami says in Hari Bhakti Vilas that ideally before accepting a guru, a disciple should live with the guru for at least 1 year so they get to know each other. Of course, he said that at that time where the usual system, so to say, was you go to the guru kul, which literally means the family of the guru. No? So you will be living with your guru and get to know each other. Not only you knowing your guru, but your guru knowing you also, right? Because it's not so only, is that guru bona fide, but am I bona fide as a disciple? How much do I want to be a disciple, actually? No? So both need to get to know each other. Again, nowadays, the system may not be that much like that. Okay, you go and live with you. But the principle still is there. Like, take some time so both get to know each other. No? So do not rush in any relationship, because sometimes we also may rush as a way of putting away the emptiness or the suffering, no? Like sometimes, again, you have a problem with your couple and then 2 days you got divorced and next week you are partying and trying to get the new girlfriend. And that's like, you're not grieving the loss. You are not taking some time to integrate, internalize the lessons from the grief that you have to go through. Escapism. You want a new one as quick as possible to fill in your void. So we can do the same with guru also. Oh, I have this problem with the guru. Okay, who's the next one now? Okay, this fell down, this fallen. to be honest, I personally don't like the expression falling down, because sometimes it's very also very definitive, like kind of branding the person as fallen, and we're all fallen. Actually, we don't even fall down, we're already there. Like once one devotee said, it was very funny, was say, because sometimes devotees had this expression falling in Maya, right? Oh, I fell in Maya, he fell in Maya, no? Like implying, generally that's not the case, and that sometimes happens. And this devotee will say, I sometimes fall in Krishna. Because I'm mostly Maya, no? Like trying to make the sober, the whole discussion. Hey guys, we are all fallen. And Krishna is Patita Pavana, no? The redeemer of the fall. So yeah. Even if you fall down, if you want to use that expression, it doesn't mean that you cannot learn a lot from that. So sometimes you fall down, whatever that means, because again, for each one, what it means falling down, breaking the four regulative principles. But maybe you are not breaking the four regulative principles, but you are full of envy and duplicity without breaking the four regulative principles. So what's worse? it's not black and white again. And even if you have a strong falling down, that may be a big blessing, a big lesson, and you are improving so much after that. So we should be very careful not, again, to put people in a box. Oh, they are fallen, they did this, and again, we keep judging each other for the past. And that's not how Krishna is seeing us. Krishna is not seeing us from what we did in the past. Krishna, and we say like, oh, thank you, so generous Krishna. You're not taking into account all that timeline. Krishna not even judging us for who we are in the present. It's like, whoa, thank you, Krishna. But Krishna is seeing us according to all that we can become in the future. That's his generosity. God is seeing us according to our brightest potential. So that feels very nice, but he's seeing everyone else in those same terms. So we should do that as well. Again, that's another way of being generous with each other. I'm not treating you for what you did. I mean, I may need to consider that and act accordingly, but I'm not limiting you to that and putting you in that box. You did this 25 years ago. I know who you are. I was like, come on, 25 years ago, give me a chance to improve, no? And even in the present. Still, you have a bright potential, even if you're a mess today, right? Anyhow, so I'm going a little bit throughout the branches, but it's all somehow connected to the to the discussion. What do you think, Bhakti Marga? Maybe I'm missing, of course, a few points, or maybe you need something else to be addressed.
I'm trying to.
Can I ask you, Sitarani? Sorry, a little bit, Sitarani. Can I ask you some water?
Sure.
Thank you.
take it as completely Krishna, about where you have decided to go with the question. I really appreciate that. That whole concept of not being in these boxes and being certain. I think that's part of the reason I have those questions, is because I want to make everything right. X, Y, and Z, tick, tick, tick.
Yeah.
Listen to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I'm not criticizing that tendency, especially if we came from some situation of suffering, or and we want to have a little bit more of certitude. Okay, next time it will work better. But in one sense, technically, nobody can guarantee you. Yeah. I assure you by paper signature that this time will be. No, so on some level, it may still feel a risk, on some level. But we have to take those steps also. On some level, again, not like without any discernment, rushing, trying to take time. But yeah, on some level, there's always the possibility of something. And I won't say nor bad nor wrong, but just something unexpected happening. But even if that happens, whatever that may be, still if we are sincere, we'll be able to learn from that and continue growing and living, getting close to Krishna. So that's for me the most important thing. Not so much whether this or happens or not with this guru, because I don't know if that will be the case. Of course, again, I try to take the most informed decision, and when I decide connecting with someone, I'm not calculating, or probably this tragedy will happen in a few years. That's it's like getting married with someone and already thinking probably we'll get divorced next year and I won't help the relationship. But at the same time, you know, that may happen. We've seen other cases of that happening. So, but at the same time, we have to try, no? Because if not, better I do not try ever again, and I do not trust anyone for my whole life. But that's even worse, no? So for me, the main point here is, of course, let's try to make it the best possible informed decision we can do now, without considering our previous experience, other people's experience, advice, what scripture said. But at the end of the day, it's my sincerity, no? Because I've seen many times situations where, okay, you can have a very advanced guru and there was never a problem, let's say, with that guru. But you may not be that sincere in that situation. And you may not be drawing so much than someone who somehow connected with the guru who had a problem, but that person was more sincere in that situation somehow and is drawing a lot from there. Follow my point? So it's not just one way.
Yeah.
That this is how it works and this is how it doesn't work. It can take so many. But again, at the end of the day, for me, if I have to boil down the whole thing, is again, one sincerity. No? So let's say Amash will refer to this verse of the Gita. Sincerity is invincible. So that's a warranty of success or victory. Sincerity, no? In your search for the truth. I want to love Krishna. I want to serve the truth. No matter if tragedy, problems happen, if you are sincere, there is, like I put one quote in Radical Personalism, something like, if some problem happens, Krishna will never, a sincere seeker of truth will not allow anything to stop his search for Krishna, and Krishna will never stop a sincere seeker of truth from getting closer to him. So if there is sincerity of heart, nothing will stop me. And if there is sincerity of heart, Krishna won't allow anything to stop me. And of course, then.
Sorry, can I say something about that word sincere? It's really interesting that you've gone into that, because I've written it down, that word, because I feel that word has been weaponized a bit.
Yeah.
I've heard people say, you know, when they think their guru is it, you know, and everyone should come to their guru. I won't say who the names are.
That in itself is a Kanishka mentality. Everyone should come to my guru.
They use that word.
Uh-huh.
If you were sincere,
uh-huh,
you would take initiation from this person. If you were sincere, then you're sort of like, it sows the seed of doubt. I don't particularly want to take initiation from that person, so I'm probably not sincere. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of way of controlling people.
Yeah, of course. That's the farthest thing from sincerity, to say that, no? Like to manipulate other people through the idea that you are not being sincere enough. I mean, for me, it's looking from what I've gone through now, looking at that, it's like, that's childish even, no? Like in one sense. And of course, childish to accept the proposal and buy into that. But we have been childish for some time, and it's okay, it's part of life. we have acquired some scars, no? Some scars. And those are informing our journey also, no? So we have to learn from that. But yeah, sincerity has nothing to do with that. Again, and sincerity, it takes different shapes. Again, it's not like, okay, if you will be sincere, you will do, everyone, all of you will do this. No. Each one will, your sincerity will take a unique shape in each case. It's not that if everyone is equally sincere, you will walk right, all of you, or go here, here, and here. No, because how sincerity expresses itself is unique in each particular situation and step of the journey. But I will choose to to emphasize that point, no? Try to, because sometimes trying to get these external warranties is an avoidance of me being sincere, right? I'll try to get the highest guru on the planet, so I mean, we may not be thinking consciously, so I don't have to be sincere. But that may be subtle. No, oh, my guru is such and such, so you cannot tell me anything. Look, the guru I have. But the question is, what are you doing with that? No? Because are you taking advantage from that personality, or you are just becoming complacent in the glories of your guru? Because that can happen. I've heard that so many times. And at the end of the day, it becomes an ego thing. No? My guru is such and such. And by extension, I am such and such, because you see, I'm connected with. But again, the question is not so much you have you been formally initiated by some of it, what you are doing with that. Okay, I appreciate you receive mantra from such a personality, whomever that personality may be, but how you're honoring that gift, that relationship, how you're embodying that, because if not, you are using your guru as a spiritual bypass. You're exploiting the greatness of your guru to justify your own complacency or evasiveness that we were talking yesterday at the end of the class. It's beautiful to say Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai, and go through their glories, but there is a point when we should stop doing that and start to embody ourselves, what they will be embodying if they will be among us now. And that will be our deepest praise to them. Because if not, I can over-glorify them as a way of not having to do the thing myself. Right? For my point, like if I'm a father and I'm like, my daddy was so great, my daddy was so incredible, and my own son is, okay, but how about you being a dad? That I'm your son, you have to be a dad for me. Also. No, but my dad was incredible. He was, yeah, but he's not my dad, you are my dad.
Is that right? A bit like Christianity where sort of say, well, Jesus has saved me, and I'm gonna, I'm bound to be fallen and sinful. There's no choice because that's the nature of the thing. But Jesus has saved me. Is that a bit like?
Yeah, sinful? I mean, yeah. If you are really saved by Jesus, you will show that through example. It's not that you use the idea of being saved to continue remaining where you are, or even worse, right? Yeah, I like to think of this word that we use sometimes, sahajya, mm-hmm. that sometimes generally is translated as someone who wants to go or situate in a situation that is higher than where you are. No? So we're talking these days, like not accepting where you are and trying to be higher or go deeper into something that you are not. But I would say that's okay. Another form of sahajya is you are in a stage and you are ready to move forward to the next chapter, but you are not going there. And you're insisting on remaining, right? In whatever kindergarten stage you need to move forward. No, no. And you're justifying that in many ways, glorifying others, or who knows, what, false humility. So both are two varieties of the same thing. You are not accepting where you are. No. Whether by trying to be more, or whether by insisting of remaining less. Right. So yeah. Smoking.
Maraj, it's quite hard to ask a question after you've talked like that. So many interesting things were raised, but I'm just reflecting on what you've spoken about while you've been here, and what I need to work on, and what question I could have to help get help with that. And one thing that I feel like you've been talking about, nishtha, being steady, right? And you were talking, you've been talking about having the right conception when we chant the holy name, and you've been talking about Krishna's love, feel it, always making sure we have. Feel that Krishna's unconditional love is there, feeling Krishna's presence. And then we look at our own practice and my practice, and then I see that it is a regulated practice, and it has been for a few years. And then you think, well, what am I doing wrong? What am I missing in my practice? And then one thing that comes to mind, because you know, we have been talking about humility and you know, the quiet grass. And I think I already mentioned this, that I feel that I can be very defensive. Like, that's my default, is to be defensive, because I feel that because of trauma, really, at the end of the day, because I'm separated from Krishna for whatever reason, you know, in this material world, and then whatever you go through in this world. So then the defensiveness is like, it's to protect. It's kind of like coming from a place of trauma. It's just to protect yourself because you feel insecure if somebody threatens, you know, even if it's not you personally, it might be somebody you like, or like it just along the lines of even that, you know, my daddy's fed it, all that type of thing. So, yeah, and so then that makes me realize, well, that's really impersonal, because why, what am I defending? Because who am I? And then if I analyze that, I think, okay, well, I'm the spirit soul. And then, better than I'm the spirit soul, as I have this loving relationship with Krishna, I should be with Krishna. And as soon as I defend, or an anatta based around a concept, a conditioned concept that I have, that I'm separated from Krishna, then Krishna's not there. And so then how do I feel? I feel worse. So I was just here wondering how you kind of bridge that gap, because it also seems like you might philosophically know. So we know that there's two, you know, there's Krishna, our endeavor, and then there's Krishna's mercy. And it seems that even if we make an endeavor, you know, that the real thing is Krishna's grace, Krishna's mercy. That's really what it is. That's going to kind of make him present in your life. So then when you do things that you know, oh no, that's going to make Krishna further from me, then that can sometimes compound, and you can kind of feel a bit bad about yourself like that and think, oh no. And so then of course it's isolating yourself more, and then you realize, well, actually that's because I'm selfish, and that's because I'm an impersonalist. So you know what I'm saying? So and then when Krishna does, because that's why you do regulated practice, why are we all here? Because you feel Krishna, and then you think, oh, that's just so amazing and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
is that just the path of, you know, the path of purification? Mm-hmm. And you just have to be patient and just, you know, or any insights on that? Does that make
sense? Yeah, a few things. One, in one sense, because you at one point you mentioned, what I am doing wrong, and maybe what I'm missing. And I'm not saying you are not doing anything wrong, but maybe we can even use another language, a more positive language, like, what can I improve? No? Because sometimes what again I'm doing wrong, like, has the assumption of, okay, I'm doing something wrong because whatever. Something else should be happening and it's not happening. So there's something wrong going on. And of course, we can use the philosophy to say that, okay, you should be chanting japa and crying in ecstasy, and that's not going on, so you are doing something wrong. But I don't think it's healthy to to frame it in that way. I mean, you can do it if you want, but I think it's way better to say, okay, I'm on the path, I'm on the journey, that's worthy of celebration. Let's begin on a positive note, right? Mm-hmm. To put everything else in that context. Probably what I'm going through, whatever that may be, is like normalizing in part what I'm going through. Not saying that's the ultimate goal, but also normalizing a little bit, like, yeah, it's natural that I'm going through this, through that, I'm seeing this struggle, I'm seeing that still, yeah, I feel myself separate from Krishna, I'm missing his presence, I have fears, I have defense mechanism. Okay, I know all that is not part of my spiritual body in Goloka Vrindavan, but also how much to place negative emphasis and feeling bad about it. I think we have to be very expert in navigating that with self-compassion also, because if we are too hard on ourselves, that's not helping. And I've seen that many times. Like, okay, in principle, you can say, I should, the word should is dangerous. No. I should be feeling this while chanting, but I'm not feeling that. I should see Krishna in the grass, and I'm not seeing that. I should, and the should itself come from a place many times from unhealthy place, no? So many times we need to be a little bit more accepting again of ourselves, of our stage in the journey, not as complacency, not as I'm here, I'm what I am, don't demand anything from me, I'm sincere. No, that's not what I'm saying. But also not the extreme of bring the whip. No. I'm bad, I must doing something wrong, and this, or as you say, Krishna is getting further from me. He's not getting further from me. I'm getting further from him in that case. He's trying his best to get as close as he can. That's his nature. So we have to also be careful how we conceptualize all the things. Oh, if I'm doing this, Krishna is getting further away from me. He's not getting further away. We may choose to look in another direction, but he's the closest of the closest. So he cannot get further away from us. We can forget the fact that he's so close, but he's not going anywhere in one sense, in the sense of he's so close to us. See, so close to us, I like to say, that sometimes we lose sight of him. But someone is so too close to us, we lose sight that the person is there because it's so close. Like my hand, I put my hand so close to my eye. I no longer see my hand now. It's too close. No, so that's Krishna. Many times when we say, oh, I don't feel Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where have you gone? Far away. No, it's not far away. It's closer and closer. But we have to be aware of that fact. Again, if we are not aware of the fact that Krishna in his nature is mercy personified and trying to get as close as he can at every moment, if we don't have that in place first, what's the Krishna we are relating to? No, and that may affect the nature of our whole practice. Mm-hmm. We may be practiced just to follow the rule, to be a good boy, a good girl, to do my homework so Krishna likes me and he doesn't get far from me. But ideal, that's not ideal. I mean, there's a place to practice from that place on some stage. At some point, it shouldn't be from that place. Shouldn't be. Krishna is not asking me to perform perfectly, right? To give him a good number. The number may be there, but he's looking for something else. And we are looking for something else also. Right? So yeah, we have fear, we have defensiveness. It's difficult for us to trust fully. Let's be honest. Right? Because that's such a huge ideal. It's a very noble, very beautiful ideal. So it also makes sense that we cannot just grasp that in a few years. No? We are like Prabhupada will say this example of the chasing the rhinos. Rhinos. Right? So you are not just going for a half-baked ideal. No? We are going for the crown jewel. So it's the jewel, the topmost crown jewel on the top of it. So it takes time. No, we may fail in the process. Fail, quote unquote. Again, if it's failing in the sincere attempt to that, there's no failure. No. So I should normalize that. And of course, if we see that we have, as you say, if you see, and it's not again only you, Sumukhi, as we were talking, we have to universalize our condition, knowing, okay, we are all going through some version of the same thing in terms of anarthanibriti. So if we say, okay, I'm building around me certain fences, even my regulated practice may be a sort of fence. I'm doing this in this way, in this way, in this way. Okay, that's who I am. No? But sometimes we need to go beyond the fence, so to say, or to throw the fence down for a moment. By this I do not mean just like throw your practice out of the window, but just consider another structures that may be necessary for this stage of my journey, because regulated practice or fences, structures facilitate, but sometimes can restrict. And it's not that I don't need any more any rules or anything, but I may need to recalibrate those rules and those parameters and maybe build new fences or new walls, more broad, more wide, more deep. to pay attention to what the, if I'm practicing sincerely, the very practice will invite me to, will tell me something. There will be something being told to me about how to live, how to practice, how to. And as we were talking these days, at one point, because you referred to Nishta also, and in one sense, in Nishta, I would say there is no considerable difference between your practice and the rest of your day and your life. No, it's not like here is my regulated practice, and here is the rest of my day. At one point, your day is your practice. Because what's your regulated practice? It's my attempt to relate, develop my relationship with Krishna. And that's not limited to the moment I'm chanting my rounds or I'm doing my puja or I'm whatever, reading the Bhagavatam or offering bhoga. That's a daily affair. No? You can develop your relationship with Krishna at every moment. No? So in time, it's healthy to expand that conception, right? Okay, I have my practice, but in one sense, if I do my practice correctly, my practice like becomes my life, and my life becomes my practice, and the two of them start to merge into each other, right? So I no longer even think about regulated practice. I think about my life, right? You follow my point? It's a gradual process. It's liberating. Yeah, because if not, again, at one point it feels constricting. Like, okay, this is my practice, and what else? What about the rest of the day? You know, and so because if I do that separation, one thing affects the other. I live my life as if it's not my practice, and that's not healthy either. And I live my practice in a very like exclusivistic way. Okay, now it's my so, yeah. At one point, the two have to merge, right? Because again, as I like to say, chanting the name of Krishna, which for us is one of our main practices, which is interesting because in one sense, the main practice that Mahaprabhu came to give is Sankirtan, which is not exactly the same as Japa, but sometimes Japa becomes the main thing, right? And the number. Not sometimes even the quality, the number. And I'm not downplaying the number. I'm not downplaying japa. I'm just saying sometimes we may emphasize something in a way that somehow prevents us from feeling that the rest of my day is part of my practice also. We end up being like over-reductionistic into this is my practice. Huh? And probably if I'm feeling like that, yeah, I will fail to feel Krishna during the rest of the day because that happens during my practice. So if I really chant japa properly, yeah, my practice becomes shower, sweeping, being a mom, being a dad, being a wife, being a husband, being anything. There's not a moment Krishna is not, right? So, yeah. Again, maybe it's part of the conversation that sometimes comes with the idea of Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. So in the beginning, our practice a little bit more rule-oriented, regulation-oriented, what to do, what not to do, be a good boy, follow the rules. But at one point, all that has to be more natural, more spontaneous. At the end of the day, Krishna wants your heart. He's not interested in any rule following. No? The ultimate rule is love. Love makes the rule. Love rules, yes. Right? You want to use that expression. Love rules. No? So if many times rules do not have much about, don't have much to do with love. No? We have to see how do I relate to with rules of regulation in a way that melts my heart. If that's not happening, probably understanding the purpose of the rule. Because the purpose of the rule is, again, all we think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. Basically, all we think of Krishna means fall in love with Krishna. Mm-hmm. You cannot always think of Krishna if you don't fall in love with him. Follow my point. Even if I tell you, I give you $10 million if you always think of Krishna. Even if you try out of that motivation, okay. After 10 seconds, you forgot because you are not in love with him. But if you are in love with him or with someone, for that matter here, you cannot not think about him. That's what the gopis once did. As we know, this Leela where they are like getting together in Istragosti, and they're like, okay, this Krishna is giving us considerable headaches. No, he's quite a tricky, mischievous, complicated guy, actually, psychologically, maybe dysfunctional. No, that's how the gopis talk in Istragosti about Krishna. So I think maybe we should, the proposal was not leave Krishna, it was let's stop thinking about him that much. So let's sit and try to forget Krishna. So they sit in circle like yogis, not like proper sitting and trying. As we sit and try to meditate and remember Krishna, they do the same, trying to forget Krishna. So everyone's like, I'm trying to fix their mind in something else with great effort. No? So after a few minutes, they start to open their eyes and like look at each other and like to ask and say, so did anyone was successful? And everyone's like, no. That means that you love Krishna. Even if you make an effort to forget him, you cannot do that. So all rules, that verse says, all rules from the scripture are servants of that idea. So if your regulated practice is activating your heart, okay, beautiful. But sometimes you need to break some rules in order to love. Like once there's this famous quote, when you have followed the rules properly, you will know when to break them. Mm-hmm. And again, break them doesn't mean I'm becoming. But sometimes you need to break them to accept a higher rule. So to say, ultimately, love is the ultimate rule. So in one sense, we are not betraying anything. We are just increasing our loyalty, our participation. Certain rules do not no longer work for me in my loving relationship with Krishna, okay? I will embrace a higher rule, a deeper rule that nourishes that. And the lower rule will be honored by that. Well, so we need to, again, it all goes back to our sincerity. But, and ultimately, technically speaking, again, you see the love of the gopis, they're breaking all rules. Mm. But keeping their rule in place, love of Krishna. So they love Krishna. The result of their love for Krishna is that they break all possible rules you can imagine. Again, not to imitate that, but to get the idea. That's the conclusion of the Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. Literally, you translate that as Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, reject all religion. It sounds like outrageous. How Krishna is concluding the Bhagavad Gita saying that? Reject all that stuff that is said in the name of Dharma, all rules, blah, 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 blah. Mami ekam sharanam braja, and come to me alone. Who is the ultimate example of that? The gopis. They reject everything. All sense of Dharma, all sense of being a dutiful wife, of being a this or that. They hear the flute of Krishna. There's no other consideration. There's no calculation in their mind. Wow, but if they cock me, no, with him, what will say the reputation of my ancestry and family and they forgot about all that. They forgot they have an ancestry. They forgot they have a husband, house. They are not even remembering. They forgot about themselves. So their love, the ultimate love is self-forgetfulness. Not even self-sacrifice, self-forgetfulness in divine love. That's the gopi's standard. Below that is self-sacrifice. I know this and I do a sacrifice being conscious of, but for the gopis is self-forgetfulness. They forgot about themselves. They're all for Krishna. That's love. That's the love of love of Vrindavan, basically. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. Mam ekam sharanam braja. Braja in Sanskrit means come. But also in Dhwani, like in ornament, poetic ornamentation, braja can mean Braja. Srila Sri Mara says, so Krishna is saying, come to me in Braj, in Vrindavan. And there's a way to approach him in Vrindavan, right? So, okay, we are not there, but somehow we have to practice in a way that we are getting closer to that standard of life. So that may take the form of sometimes, yeah, I may need to let go, release some rules, regulations, only for the sake of a higher rule, of a deeper commitment with love. So that requires sincerity, that requires discernment, that requires introspection and guidance and sharing to know how to take those steps, but we need to take them, especially when we feel sometimes, and we all, I think, felt that certain stages, I'm like stuck here. It's not working for me. It's not that the process is not working. It's that I'm invited to embrace it in a more intimate way, more confidential way.
Did you say I'm being miser to?
Invited. Probably I'm being miser also, but I'm being invited to rediscover Krishna consciousness in a whole another level. Mm-hmm. Continue to upgrade my relationship with Krishna. Never take for granted Krishna consciousness. Never think you already know what that is all about. Yeah, that particular template may work for us for certain years, and at one point that becomes obsolete. Mm-hmm. It no longer works. That template, not the whole Krishna consciousness. So we have to understand the difference between those two things, because if not, we think, oh, it's no longer working, or I'm no longer working. What's wrong with me? No, and we can go neurotic. Oh, it must be all my offenses because of this. It's not working. Mm. And that's probably not the case. And it's not the case, definitely. That's not the fault of Krishna consciousness. It's just that you have, like, how to say in English?
Outgrown.
So that particular way of practicing is no longer, no, has its shelf life, so to say. Mm. No. You are now invited to a new level, upgrading. Like an app in your phone. At one point, the app is you have to download the newer version because it's not working. So, yeah, that's how we all need to progress in that journey that way.
Raj, where does sacrifice come in this kind of regard in terms of, like, you know, sacrificing can be seen like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, Woody. Self-sacrificing can have a negative connotation, basically.
Yeah, it can, of course. As we were talking these days in the lectures, I mean, self-sacrifice is not bad, but you can over engage in it in a way that is beyond your current capabilities. So in that sense, it has a negative connotation. If you sacrifice yourself to a point that you feel that I'm losing myself, I'm being dysfunctional, I'm being abused, I feel overwhelmed, this is too much, I'm not thinking more about Krishna by doing this, I'm more and more disturbed by this level of sacrifice, you have to maybe recalibrate, right? Which of course doesn't mean going to the extreme of I don't like the word sacrifice. I won't sacrifice at all because it's another side of the same coin. So how to sacrifice in a way that is challenging enough for me to feel that I'm growing? And sacrifice, again, means mostly how I personally conceive it. Sacrifice is, because sometimes in our tradition we have the idea of sacrifice, the fire sacrifice. Yeah, the yajna. So sacrifice means put into the fire an older version of you, an older conception, as we were talking now, and a certain idea of how to practice Krishna consciousness no longer works. So put it into the, it's a sacrifice. Because we are attached to doing it in a certain way, and going beyond that known way, it feels uncertain. It feels like unknown. But what will happen if I leave the familiar? It's a sacrifice. It's not easy, it's uncomfortable. But at the same time, with your intelligence, you know, I need to do it. I feel miserably stagnant here. So I feel the urge to call to grow, to be more. but I have to take some steps into something that I don't know, it's uncertain. It feels risky, but it's okay. It's necessary. So that's a type of sacrifice, you know? When we clearly are in situations in life that we know we are called to take a step, to take responsibility, and we know it will not be easy, but I have to do it. And once you do it properly, in a sustainable way, again, you look back and I learned so much from that. Like in my case personally, somehow what comes to my mind, and I don't want to sound like I'm talking about myself and I'm such a sacrificer, but 2 years ago, I was invited by a group of friends, devotees, to do Dandavat Parikram to Govardhan. So that was sacrifice, on some level at least. No? Dandavat Parikram, not walking Govardhan, but circumambulating doing Dandavat. So that took like 2 weeks. It was intense, as you can imagine. Physically, to begin with, I never been as exhausted as I was during that time. So I knew, I mean, it won't be easy. It's not, it will be from my comfort zone. I will do it. It will be demanding, exhausting. And at the same time, I knew there may be some days where I will collapse. So I need also to know when to stop. I need to know how to push myself to a limit, so to say, but I also need to know when to not go even beyond that, because it becomes unhealthy. And both things happened, right? So there were a few days where I felt, I cannot go today. It's too much. I can't move. It will be like dishonoring this body also, chastising this body in a way that is not healthy. So I remember talking to one of the devotees organizing the retreat, and he said, yeah, Maharaj, honor your limitations. No, I like that phrase. Honor your limitations. That doesn't mean use them to justify and not grow, but just when it's clear that you have hit your limitation, honor that. No, you've been trying to push forward, to make an effort to go beyond your comfort zone. Great. But that also can become at one point excessive and toxic also, if you keep pushing instead of, okay, now I have to rest. No? Restorative. Productive, restorative, both are necessary. So it's not about only self-sacrifice also. No, that's not my point. Because sometimes I've seen that in the name of dedication, in the name of service, we overemphasize like sacrifice, 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 sacrifice. And sometimes Krishna says in the Gita, yukta hara viharasya yukta chastasya karmasu yukta swapna babodasya. And he says, you have to be balanced in your eating, in your sleeping, in whatever happens during your day, in your recreation. If you want to be successful in yoga, you have to be balanced. So it's not about all day sacrifice or all day productivity. You need also to restore, to rest, to relax, to recreate, Krishna is saying.
And the other side of the coin being when we make excuses or are lazy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I say before, that's up to your sincerity, right? We have to be sincere. If I'm sincere, I won't allow myself to create those excuses. But also if I'm sincere, I won't allow myself to go beyond a limit that is unhealthy. You know? So sincerity also will bring sobriety to the whole situation, right? Because both extremes are two sides of the same coin. Over sacrificing is a form of escapism also. You know? I'm doing too much. Why? What I'm running from? What I'm running away from? Why cannot I just be for a moment quiet, paying attention without having to be productive all day or being the most sacrificial person of the group? I mean, Krishna loves you when you are recreating yourself also. So my point is, behind all the things, many times there are many assumptions that we have, very many belief systems, if you will, like I have to sacrifice on this level because if not, I cannot recreate myself because if I do so, many times we carry assumptions, beliefs that are not necessarily true about things, about Krishna, about reality. So part of the practice is deconstructing all that stuff. And Artha Nivritti means deconstructing false ideas. No? Remember in Mayapur, we gave a series of lectures about, I don't know the name, something like rediscovering our relationship with Krishna. And we began saying that. Part of rediscovering my relationship with Krishna is becoming awake to conscious of the many assumptions we may have about Krishna to begin with, which are not true. And that get in the way of who is he is and who we are in connection to him. So we have to remain open, curious, going back to, okay, maybe I'm carrying a few wrong assumptions about Krishna. Maybe I'm carrying about some wrong assumptions about me, about practice. Or maybe they're not wrong. Maybe they're just, again, they have run obsolete. They have had a purpose in this chapter, but I'm carrying them too much. They need to be released now. They need to die for something else to be born. That's another way of conceiving our process. Die, born. Die, be born again. Yeah. So recreation can be part of practice also. Again, recreation doesn't mean I overindulge in something and totally forget Krishna for nothing like that. It's part of the, in that chapter, Krishna, chapter 6 of the Gita, he's describing the yogi. So a yogi traditionally is living in the cave. So there's even place for recreation for the yogi in the cave. Of course, his recreation may be different than ours. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments to that verse and says, the recreation of the yogi is to walk, to wake up from his sitting position in the cave and to go for a walk and return to the cave. That's not our path, fortunately. So we have another, maybe more funny ways of recreating. But it's good. The other day I was talking with Krishna Lila. She's a psychologist, devotee. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me, like, in my experience with devotees, I've seen that they, many of them, do not have fun at all. So they are like very, there's a tension there. Is there something that needs to be released? In moments of, again, fun, recreate. It doesn't mean, again, I'm doing something horrible or something extreme that is deviating myself from Krishna. It's like a natural release. Of energy and expression of myself. No? But again, do I have any assumptions there saying, no, you cannot have fun? Recreation? You're losing your time. Look the standard of Raghunath Das Goswami. Which was his recreation? Which is yours? So, anyhow, we need to bring all those voices from the shed and shed light on the shed. Thank you for that contribution. Ramdas, he said that yesterday. We shed light on the shed of our unconscious and bring that from secrecy and put that in our conscious and work with that. Right?
Then maybe we can shed the shed.
Also, yeah, that's another one. Another, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that helps, Mickey. Yes, thank you for the question.
Shedding your skin as well, right?
Yeah, that's a classical analogy, like the snake, right? Mm. It's a form of death, but still the snake continues growing. But you need to do that. So we need to do that. Yeah.
What did Bhakti Tirtha Swami say? Die before dying.
Actually, that's a famous quote from I think it's Saint Augustine. I'm Christian, but anyhow, it's the same. But yeah, die before dying. We need to die, and many times. I remember talking with a spirit sister of mine, spiritual sister, and she will say, once she came with this idea of 100 deaths before lunch. No, like implying during the day, sometimes you have intense day that before the point of ritual lunchtime, you have died 100 times already, but born again 100 times. We have born again Christians, born again Gaudiya Vaishnavas as well. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes all this language, again, language, imaginary, helps us to articulate the journey, what should be taking place. So, yeah. We should not be afraid, although it feels risky. Srila Siddha Maharaj will say, in the beginning, you feel like hearing all this stuff. In the beginning, one may hear, oh no, too much risk and no gain. All risk, no gain. So we will be like petrified. I won't take a step in that direction. But the more we progress, he said, we will understand the more I risk, the more risk, the more gain. It's another psychology. And then you will realize no risk, all gain. From the higher perspective, I'm not risking anything. I have nothing to lose. I have everything to gain. Krishna's on my side. There's no conspiracy, cosmic conspiracy against me. Everything is trying to support my journey. So yeah. That's why I like to say that the very first sound from which everything came is Om. And one meaning of Om in Sanskrit is yes. Yes. If in Sanskrit you want to say yes, you say Om. In the Bhagavatam, many times when it says there's an affirmation, say Om. So it all begins with a yes. Right? It's the whole thing does not begin with no. It's yes. There is an acceptance. There is a positive invitation. You are already loved by Krishna. Yes. So begin with the yes as a foundation. Then you can put some no's that we may need to establish, but on the foundation of yes. If we do the opposite, it's like what Prabhupada would say. You are adding numbers, and you add the first number wrong. No matter how correct is the rest of the process, end result will be wrong, because you started with not with a yes, with a no. Okay. You have a question?
Well,
okay.
I feel like you've been answering it this morning. It's not so much of a question, too. It's kind of like revealing how my mind works or has worked. And because you've been talking a lot about Krishna's unconditional love for the living entities, and I think there's a part of me which, and this might be coming from a bit of my lazy sort of tendencies, which is like to rely on that love and rely on Krishna knowing the state of my heart and feeling like he's my friend.
Yeah.
And he knows my heart. He knows if I keep it sincere, he'll know. And if I don't do great things in my practice, he'll still accept it.
Yeah.
but relying on that and becoming a bit lazy. And there's also another aspect to this, which I've been thinking about, because in the first talk you had, you were talking about how humility, tolerance, and respect for others, having that mindset, that attitude, is almost more important than the practice itself, is having the right attitude.
Yeah, that's the practice.
Yeah. But like,
you have to practice that.
So I think part of it also is like, well, you know, I might be at risk at not having the right attitude. And if I go too strong, it'll be unnatural for me. And I might go off on the wrong tangent. So it's almost like, okay, it's safer just to stay where I'm not going too intense into anything. and just stay here because Krishna knows that I didn't see him. It's like, that's all going to work out.
I mean, there is, it reminds Srila Siddhartha Maharaj one will say, if you're in a situation in your life, and in some situation, in some stage of the journey, and you are not sure about which next step to do or not to take a step that feels too much, sometimes it's better to stay where you are. No, it's not that it's always like, no, sometimes you, if you know, okay, this is a safe space I have now and I need that. Again, if you are sincere, sorry to go back over and over again to that word, but if you are sincere, you also have will perceive inside of you like, okay, am I being complacent or am I being called to grow? I'm satisfied where I am, I'm happy, or I'm dissatisfied. No? Because the word contentment comes to my mind here. No? There is a place for contentment in Krishna consciousness. It's not like you cannot be content. You have to go for the next one. Come on, come on. No, it's not like that also. But as you say, there's always a balance of not making that a complacent thing. And complacency, if you are being complacent or if you are, so to say, cheating yourself in terms of Krishna loves me, he's my friend, I stay here forever. I mean, if you are honest, again, I trust you're honest. So if you are honest, you yourself and Krishna himself would make clear that you are being invited for something else now. Okay, Ram, it was good for you to stay in that place, to take shelter in that fact that Krishna loves me, because some of us or many of us may need that resting place for a while, because we may come from a situation that nothing of that happened, or we have been practicing or thinking that Krishna doesn't love me, he's angry with me, he may take my human form of life at any moment, at the minimum mistake I made. I don't know, I've heard a few literally neurotic readings of Krishna consciousness. So when you realize that was not the case and Krishna loves you and he's your friend, you may need to decompress for a while and rest in that idea for a few years probably, right? And it's okay. It's okay. But at some point you will be invited to, because Krishna is your friend. He's your friend, but he wants you to be his friend. So he wants the whole thing always to be reciprocal. And okay, on some level, the reciprocity is acknowledging he's my friend. Thank you, Krishna. You love me. At one point, naturally, you should feel, okay, he loves me, but do I love him? No? It's reciprocal, again. So, and it doesn't have to come from a place of, again, intimidation, of pressure. Okay, I should love him. He loves me and I'm not loving. But it's, for me, it's more like try to go deep in how Krishna loves you. It's not enough for me just, okay, Krishna loves me. At some stage, it may be enough. Okay, Krishna loves me. Oof. Don't tell me anymore. I need to rest in that idea for a few months, years to heal. Okay. Okay. Eventually, how Krishna loves me, in which way? When the more we go deep into that, if we are sincere, we will feel moved to reciprocate with that. Naturally, if we are sincere, we'll feel like, wow, this is too much. This is incredible. I mean, what to do? Again, if like someone, it's a material example, but I don't know, puts in your bank account $10,000 per month, anonymous. Imagine that. Mm. Yeah. Just imagine, because probably will never happen. But it's already happening in a way better way, as you can imagine where I'm going. Someone is giving you $10,000, but it's anonymous. Next month again, next month. I mean, you will be thinking all day about that person, that you don't know who that person is. But it's like, first, who is this person? And second, why? Maybe why is the main question at one point. Why he's giving or she's giving, whomever it is giving this to me every month. Why? Right? And what if the name comes at one point and his name is whatever, and it's not someone you know? I was like, It's someone that just wants to give that to you. But you will be asking, but why? I just want to give that to you. If you are minimum sincere on some level, you will start to feel, what can I give you back? Right? It's not like, oh, great, keep going. Maybe next one you can do, give double. No? You won't go there if you're sincere. You will feel like more play. You will be humbled by the generosity of the person, of the gift. And again, I'm giving you a material example. Of course, the real example is Krishna is loving you unconditionally from time without beginning, which is way more worth than all the wealth in the world. So anonymously, in one sense, no? Anonymously in the sense that we have not been aware of that, recognized that, known about him. No? So when we become aware of that, it's like, but why? There's no why. Krishna doesn't work in that way. It's not about like, oh, you did this and you deserved it, so now I'm giving you the prize for that. It's not about feeding my ego. Oh, I earn it. It's no, this is not about earning. Krishna's love is too much to be earned. It's too much to be deserved. We have to use another logic here. So when we enter into all that, naturally we'll feel moved to not only to give something back, but to give our whole lives. Because when we really realize the nature of that love that is being given to us, the only question we will have at that point is, how can I serve? That's the meaning of the word kinkara, which means servant. Mahaprabhu says, ai inanda tanoya kinkaram. Kim kara. Kara means to do. Kim means what. What to do? What can I do? That's the only question a servant has. Because the real servant has realized how much he or she has received. So now I have the only question, how to reciprocate. It's a gradual process, all this I'm saying. It's not something that happens at once. But again, if we are sincere, we'll naturally get there at some point. Though, again, it shouldn't be like pressure. Okay, I should be there by next year and this. We make the whole love thing, again, rule-bound and pressure, intimidation, fear-oriented. That's not about it. We may need to rest in the idea that Krishna is my best friend. It's fine. It's fine. It's an idea worthy of resting in. No? Krishna says that in the Gita, right? Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Bhagavad Gita 5:29, if you don't believe me. Mm-hmm. Krishna saying there, I'm the well-wishing, unconditional friend. Suhrit means that. I'm the well-wishing, unconditional friend of sarvabhutanam, all living entities. He's not even saying those who worship me. He's in everyone. So I'm unconditional friend to every single living entity. Again, it's difficult to even think about that because we struggle to be good friends with 1, 2, 3, 4 people, and he's the best possible friend of everyone. Including us, of course. So playing out the implications of that gradually in our life, what does it mean that he's the best unconditional friend of me, of everyone, inviting me to that relationship? Yeah, it's transforming, and gradually it brings us to the place of wanting to offer ourselves back in his service for the right reasons. That's why I personally feel it's so important to first establish the foundation Krishna loves you. So you try to love back him back for the right reasons. If you don't think Krishna loves you, probably you're trying to love him out of fear, out of intimidation, trying to deserve it, trying to earn his love for the wrong reasons. You're trying to love Krishna. But when you know he already loves you infinitely and conditionally, you are moved to a point that you want to love him back for the right reasons. So, yeah. Thanks for sharing, Ram. I hope that helps.
Mm,
yeah, what you share helps also. And again, it's not only your own situation. Again, it's something that we all go through, what you were sharing also, you know, how to... The healthy concern, I mean, the fact that you are concerned in a healthy way, oh, I may be become complacent, and that in itself shows your sincerity. The fact that you are concerned, I don't want to become complacent, I may be doing that, in itself shows a sincerity. an openness to consider, I could be doing this better or not. So that sincerity warrants that Krishna will inspire you and you will be able to recognize that inspiration also. Yeah. Okay. So we are 1 hour and a half. Something else before concluding? I have a few commitments today. I have a few calls to do and some other things, but I don't want to neglect if there's something else that cannot wait. I won't allow you to sleep peacefully this night. I want everyone to have a sound sleep. Okay, so maybe we can put the discussion to rest. And today in the evening, we're again meeting for the third line of Shikshastakam. Namanina Manadina. So looking forward to that one. See you there. Thank you so much for questions, your presence, your sincere inquiry. Sri Sri Gornitai ki ja, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki ja, Srila Prabhupada ki ja, Sadhu Sangha ki ja, Gaur Premananda, Panchakalpataru Vishta, Gripasindu Hei Vacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namah.